Still more texts coming in, people giving advice to the southwest suburbs what to do with their festivals. I still say put them on, put them on, put them on. Don't let the terrorists win. Eric Zorn joins us now, the publisher of a newsletter called The Picayune Sentinel. You read him for years in the Tribune. He's still writing every week, probably every day. Hey, Eric, how are you?
Not every day, John. Not over the holiday weekend, certainly. And, I try to write like 3 days a week now instead of five. So
do you just love that? Do you love that schedule?
I love the schedule. This is semi-retirement, I guess, or semi-working, whatever. But yeah, it's a great schedule. Give me a lot of time to come visit you out of your suburban mansion if you'd like to invite me.
You are invited. Is your son going to play anytime at that saloon that we heard him play last year or 2 years ago?
I don't know. Yeah, it was 2 summers ago. He played at the Dockside facility out there. He and his bluegrass band. And it was fun. You, me, and Brenda were watched the show there. I don't know if they've got something scheduled out there or not. They rehearse out in Ottawa a lot because that's convenient. They're spread out all over the region, the band members. But yeah, that band is still going strong. So we're excited.
It's bluegrass?
Yeah, it's bluegrass. The River Valley Rangers. They're based in the Fox River Valley. We don't live anywhere near the Fox River Valley, but that's the band that he hooked on with. So that's what we're doing.
You know what they have out there in Ottawa now is one of those like Mark Twain styled old fashioned paddle wheel boats that they've retrofitted, cleaned up, repainted, scrubbed it, and then they serve food and drinks and they do cruises like at 7 o'clock at night and a Sunday brunch. And so we went out there one time. We've done it once last summer. You go out like at 7 o'clock. You have some cocktails and hors d'oeuvres or a dessert cruise and some drinks. And, you know, you watch the Illinois and Fox River Valley and the sunset. It's just positively lovely. But they have live entertainment on the thing, too. And I could see your son's band playing there.
What sort of entertainment do they have? Is it music?
Yeah.
Comedy?
Yeah, no, like a three-piece jazz or, a guitar player or a bluegrass band that would be perfect.
Wow, that does sound perfect. It sounds like a nice trip, too, because the river is very pretty around there.
It is, and the bald eagles and the wildlife. All right, let's talk about the suburban life. What would you do? Answer my news click, which we're going to put up, Eric. If you were in charge of a southwest suburb, would you cancel your festival for the summer or would you still have it on?
No, I would still have it on. I think that you can't let these these kids who are taking over these festivals, you can't let them win. You can't let them take over your schedule like that, because once you start, getting into a crouch, then, where do you go from there? I think you need to enhance security, clearly. They need to really be ready for the kind of trouble that they saw in Tinley Park. But canceling them, where do you go from there once you cancel it? You say, well, what allows you to restart them again?
Right, that's a good question. So when are you going to feel safe enough? Because you're always going to have that element of the unknown.
Well, they've been having these festivals, suburban festivals and fairs and so on for generations, forever. They've had these things, and occasionally there are fights and things that get out of hand, but I don't see this as something that is unsolvable or so chronic that we have to stop doing them. That would be a terrible comment on society today if that's the case. And I did see the videos from the handheld videos and so on from Tinley Park. It looked pretty scary. But it also looked like something that law enforcement needs to get its hands around, and maybe they need help from state police and other jurisdictions to make sure that trouble doesn't run away with these things. But gosh, I can't see deciding we're not going to do this kind of thing in the summer anymore. It's such a wonderful thing in the summer to be able to go to these festivals and fairs and get out and break your routine. I would hate to see those come to an end.
What did you write about parking for teachers in public schools on the public thoroughfare? And are you in big trouble now, Eric?
I might be, yeah. What happened was a reader sent me, lives near Chicago Northwest Side Elementary School, and he posted a sign saying, during school hours, these parking spaces on the public street are reserved for school personnel only. I assume they have stickers that identify them as such. And so it's kind of like the permit parking situation, but it's like the residents who live around there can't park there, but only school personnel can park on the public streets. I had never seen that before. I don't really like permit parking zones. I can't remember if there's one near. You certainly had them near your old place when you lived closer to Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
But you know, those zones, they're just. I don't like them unless there's been a dramatic change in the neighborhood, like a new huge business comes in or a new community college or something pops in. Then all of a sudden the ground changes underneath the residents. But in general, I don't care for them, and so I really was thinking, oh, this is a bad idea, giving the streets over to employees rather than residents. I would think that would be really annoying. And I posted this online, and I got a lot of thoughtful responses. People were saying, you know what, teachers have a tough job. We have a teacher shortage, and so we allow them a little bit better parking. It's a smarter thing to do than to pave over part of the playground. Which would be the other alternative for these schools, is like, okay, well, the residents are going to be complaining about this, so that we're going to pave over the get rid of the swing sets and so on and put in a parking lot. But that would be a really bad idea. And I'm starting to come around on the idea that maybe during the school day to have a few spots for teachers is not such a terrible idea. I got to say, my initial reaction was very negative, and now I'm more of a mixed mind about it.
Look at you. I'm glad to hear you say that, because I think you posted something along the lines of, we don't allow that for people in other fields of work if you have to find a public parking spot. So why do we allow it for teachers? Why do we compromise, say, the neighborhood for the sake of the teachers? And you've sort of softened your view on that, huh?
I did. I mean, I live close to a business, and a lot of the employees park in front of my house during the day. Now, I have a garage, so it doesn't really bother me, and I'm glad that the business exists and it's providing jobs in the city and part of the tax base. It's all fine with me. I think if I had trouble parking, I might be a little bit more irritated by that, but I would really be irritated if all of a sudden the business were to get some sort of a permit saying only employees of our business can park on your street during the workday. That would really bother me. I mean, that would strike me as a bridge too far. And I'm thinking that the neighbors in some of these communities near schools might think, well, hey, you know, the streets do not belong to the teachers. The streets belong to all of us, and we should be able to park, you know, on the street like everybody else, school day or not. So I can see where this could be a point of conflict. I've never seen signs like this before, but people responding to my post said that this has happened in other areas. I don't know if it happens in the suburbs or not, but in other city schools, this has happened. So I'm curious whether it's a source of controversy in these communities or if people are just really used to it.
773. So is Eric Zorn only concerned about this issue if it affects him? And 630 said, teachers, please. My husband's in construction and their cars are targeted because they have tools. I'm sorry to hear that, and I'm not sure what the criticism of Eric has to do with any of this. He said he thinks that you should allow teachers to park in the street, give them stickers, and give them the public space because they're teachers and it's hard to find a place to park sometimes.
Well, I was of a mixed mind about it. My first reaction was I didn't like the idea, and as if people have made the case for it, I'm softening on my view on that. I can certainly see both sides of it in a way that I didn't initially. It doesn't affect me, though. The reader said it only bothers if it affects me. No, this problem does not affect me. I do, you know, wonder what people who live near the schools, how they feel about this. And I would be in sympathy with them if they were to make a big deal about it. I would wonder if there's a way to compromise on this and say, okay, we will allow some spaces for teachers with the understanding that the alternative is paving over the playground. Or maybe you say that not everybody who works for the school gets a spot there, but we give a special spot to teachers, but you don't give a spot to the principal who doesn't, you know, the principal can walk. Right, it's like
leadership. That's leadership.
Yeah, and other people were saying, "Oh, why don't the teachers take public transportation?" Well, that would require for many of them getting up an hour or two earlier every day, and you know, and I do respect teachers a great deal. I think they're undervalued in our society, and I think it's a complicated question. I didn't really think it through before I posted about it, and it's been interesting to hear people's responses. Maybe that can be your news click after you do the community carnivals.
Right. Yeah, you're going to cancel the festival. 773 said, why do teachers not just take the CTA as an example to their students and all of the citizens of Chicago to stop emissions? Well, why don't you? I mean, you know, I'm like, all right, that'd be a good idea. But the guy's just trying to get to work. Let's just take Shirley, and then I want to go on to your mother-in-law joke comment. Shirley, you're on the air. What do you want to say?
I was a teacher for 32 years, and we didn't have a parking lot. And people don't understand. It's not like a regular business. Schools don't have a lot of money. And so we would park in the street, and some of the neighbors would put notes on the windshield saying, we don't want you parking here. Well, what are we supposed to do? And taking public transportation, well, you got to remember that teachers are carrying their lunch, a bag with all papers, and they probably corrected the night before. I mean, they're carrying many things with them. For the public transportation is not an easy thing. And they also have to maybe dropped off or picked up their kids at a daycare before they come to work.
Yeah. Yeah. I never thought about it either until you and Eric brought it up. And if I were king and had to decide today, I would say, I would side with the teachers. I would afford them parking stickers to park in the community. But you know what? If in Chicago you spent $400,000 on a very average house in the city, you'd like to be able to park in front of it. Although plenty of times now that I think about it, I've driven around the block looking for a spot by my condo and parked a block or two away and walked over. That's the nature of living in the city, I guess, huh? Eric, so you told a mother-in-law, did you tweet out, did you include in your tweet poll the mother-in-law joke?
Yes, it was actually the winning tweet.
Really?
So far, the poll is still going, but yeah. And just to refresh anyone who just tuned in, a week ago, my mother-in-law began reading The Exorcist. She said it was an evil book, so she took it to the beach and threw it off the pier. So I went and bought another copy, ran it under the tap, and left it on the bedside table in her room, which is a very funny prank, right? I mean, the idea of the book pulling itself out of the sea and showing back up on the nightstand is pretty funny, and readers thought it was funny. I did have a reader write to me and say that this is a mother-in-law joke, and that mother-in-law jokes are misogynistic, and they make fun of women and older women in particular. And she's, you know, I love my mother-in-law. What's going on? Why would you make fun of mothers-in-law? And I don't see it as a mother-in-law joke. I think that I don't know why the author of the joke put mother-in-law there. It could have been brother-in-law. It could have been uncle. It could have been friend. It could have been anybody. I mean, the joke is somebody being disgusted by the exorcist and throwing it into the water and having it then magically appear to show up again on the nightstand. So I didn't think that it had anything to do with the sort of mother-in-law stereotypes that are, I agree, offensive and outdated. But this reader saw it differently. So I thought I'd put that out there for people to judge themselves, whether they thought that it was a mother-in-law joke or just a joke.
Well, as the curator of jokes here, I do tell mother-in-law jokes sometimes, and now I'm rethinking it. And when this joke was sent to me, it did strike me as being a mother-in-law joke because the mother-in-law is that person you typically don't like. She's the old witch that is a pain in your butt, and that's the trope. That's the punchline. So this is kind of giving it back to her. Now, you're right. You could have done that to your uncle, but I saw why this was a mother-in-law joke, at least when I first read it. But I'll tell you, Eric, the categories of jokes that I don't tell anymore are many. You know, I don't do blonde jokes. I don't do Polish jokes. I don't do disability jokes like you ever would. But I mean, I got a joke this week about a stutterer. And I thought, 20 years ago, I would have told that joke on the radio. And I'm not telling that joke now. If we ever tell a joke about somebody who is dyslexic, I struggle with that. Can you believe that? Because that seems so banal, right? But people have dyslexia. It troubles their lives. Why are you making fun of them? I'm not trying to make fun of it. Just trying to tell a joke here. But conundrum.
Yeah, when I put together my weekly poll, I collect, I go online, I curate all these tweets and try to find funny ones. And some weeks I succeed more than others, but my wife Johanna always reads them ahead of time, and she often busts me for things that I'll find funny that rely on the idea of like a nagging girlfriend. There's some, you know, those sort of nagging girlfriend jokes or nagging wife jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
And she always is like, you know what? She just like, she'll put a red pen through that. Like, don't, you know, that's not good. And of course, any joke that relies on weight, on, you know, fat jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't include those, but those are the kinds of jokes that sometimes my sensitivity meter is not as finely calibrated as it should be. So it's really good for me to have Johanna. If you want to run your speed jokes by her, I'm sure she'd be amenable to finding the offensive ones. And have you ever gotten in trouble for telling a joke and having people have real backlash? And,
yep.
I mean, I don't mean real trouble, but people getting really mad at you. Like, how could you possibly make fun of?
Yep.
You know,
yep. Yep.
I mean, there's a shock. There's a little bit of a shock element to some of these jokes, right? I mean,
that's like, yeah, but I'm never. But you know, blonde jokes are never shocking, and Polish jokes are never shocking, and Catholic jokes were never really shocking. It was just play Irish jokes. I still get Irish jokes all the time, and that's probably a bad place to go.
It is on the other hand, you know, it's like an Irish joke, I don't think is as categorically offensive to say a joke about black people, say. I mean, when you're...
How about a Jewish joke?
Irish,
how about Jews?
Well, those are much more sensitive topics than you know, the Irish are just this, you know,
you're saying that while Jewish people may feel more marginalized or it might be more sensitive area, it's okay to make fun of the Irish people and the stereotypes about them. Is that what you're saying, Eric Zorn?
I am saying, because I don't think that anti-Irish sentiment, although it was common in the United States 150 years ago or whatever it was, anti-Semitism is a current, actual, real problem. I don't think there's any anti-Irish sentiment out there that's serious. And that people would call, when I would complain about the term Redskins.
Oh, that's an interesting distinction.
Team.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah, and people say, like, what about the Fighting Irish? And the stereotype of the Fighting Irish, and isn't that just as offensive as the Redskins? And I was like, no, there's all this cultural context that goes along with what makes something offensive. And the truth is that anti-Semitism and that the American Indians have been robbed of their land and their dignity and are marginalized. And there's a real difference between that and Irish people who are very successful, very well integrated into society. I just don't think that anti-Irish sentiment is a thing.
You know what I do sometimes is I couch the joke as a joke on me. So I'm the Irishman. I'm the blonde. I'm the fat guy. And I don't, you know, for instance, my heart says chocolate and wine, but my genes say, for the love of God, woman, eat a salad. Somebody sent me that joke, right? And a woman, women are maybe more weight conscious than men are in our popular culture. But I didn't like pinning that on a woman, so I made it a John joke today, which doesn't really make that much sense for me, but that's the space we live in. We're out of time, Eric. By the way, hey, John Williams, this is Pam in Ottawa. I just got in the car, and you were talking to Eric Zorn about the Saint Genevieve. If that is true, if he's really interested in getting his son's band on the boat, he can reach out to Gentry Nordstrom. Here's the number. I will forward this along to you, Eric.
I will. That's great. I will love that, because I think I could be a great evening, and I'll pay for the drinks for you and Brenda to come along on the boat.
Well, then I'm definitely going to make this happen. It's the Saint Genevieve in Ottawa. All right, we're out of time. Let's you and I be part of the Mincing Rascals podcast. You did a great job hosting it for me while I was away last week. Thanks for your help.
Great. I'll talk to you tomorrow, John.
You can subscribe to the Picayune Sentinel. Just email Eric Zorn at gmail.com. He'll set you up for free.